Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, radio expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. I'm the host, Kevin S. Fox, coming to you from Studio 4 near General Tyre in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, where the show and I have recently moved in an effort to expand our own view of the world. Tonight's episode marks the end of Season 3 and marks the end, for the time being, of our Middle Europe-focused explorations. The show is in transition now, getting Season 4 ready with many voices and sounds of Tanzania. We look forward to kicking off our new expeditions next month. This month, however, we have a special episode for you, special because it follows up on our 32nd episode, Hasta la Habana Siempre, where we unpack the dominant ways of seeing Cuba with American geographer Johnny Finn. But special also because the conversation about putting this together started at a public forum that I've had the opportunity now to participate in many times, that of Pechacucha Nights. Pechacucha Nights provide a space for presenters to share their ideas, projects, and various commitments in a fun 20-slide, 20-second per slide format. Pechacucha has certainly helped this show grow and has helped me put together many ideas in a much more concrete fashion. I love the ethos of Pechacucha, and I'm very happy to share such an important project with the listeners tonight. I met Chris Heidrich in Solothurn, Switzerland last April when I participated in their Culture Nacht, Pechacucha Night. I spoke about geographical imaginations. Chris presented her preliminary work on a project that also challenges dominant ways of seeing, here with architecture. Who designs the city and for whom? She is working with female architects, hence this episode's title, La Arquitecta, who are preserving and shaping Old Havana as this capital city turns 500 years old. Chris's plan is to bring their work to a wider public, namely in Europe, to help challenge our own ideas about who designs the city, the blocks, and the buildings. An extensive exhibition of work is planned, something that we at Geographical Imaginations are very interested in, the circulation of images and texts treating other parts and peoples of the world. How do these inform how we then imagine that place or those people? Tonight we speak with Chris over Skype to hear more about Resonance and the exhibition and project she wants to bring to Europe from Cuba. We explore the social aspects of urban planning processes, social life in cities, and the bigger picture of what it means to design a city and shape it. Whose hands do the shaping? In the last segment, because this show is very much about the process, we look at methods. We ask Chris about her own process of reading spaces. Stay tuned.
So I found your website. You sent me, and it's... and I'm going to butcher this in German because I don't have my pronunciation mastered yet here, but Raum Resonance, and it's, mm-hmm. Raum could mean what? It could mean room. It could mean space as well, though, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In English. And then resonance, I wonder if that's the same as we might think in English, or explain to me, I guess, what the meaning of the title sort of your website, where you do showcase your different projects. Where did that come from? Where did the idea for that come from? And what does it really mean for you?
Mm-hmm. So I'm architect. So space and resonating space means that somebody who is in a space is affecting this space. So this is one meaning of resonance for me.
Uh-huh.
The other meaning for the resonance is that we are influenced by the circumstances, by the context, by the space which is surrounding us. And this influences us in our feelings and in our thoughts. So resonance is in both ways, outside and inside.
Yeah, so...
Every architecture, every building, especially in an urban context, is influencing the inhabitants. in the way they are acting and they are feeling, and in a sociological way as well. And this is, for me, the most important aspect of architecture.
Yeah. And is it architecture that keeps that in mind, or that is designed with that in mind? Is that something that...
Yeah, this is very important for me, because I think architecture has to be built in order to offer good circumstances for people, so that they can find a harmonious way of life, or a good way of life, which is giving them a good feeling and influence life in a positive way.
Yeah. So the architect then is producing that environment by design?
Yes, by understanding the needs of the inhabitants, or of the future inhabitants, which sometimes is difficult.
Right.
But we can try as architects, but sometimes we find out after a while, okay, this is a process. We find out the inhabitants have different needs than we thought. So, but this is a point which is very important for me, that urban planners or architects have the possibility to ask the inhabitants to analyze what has changed, and do they have different needs than we had thought before, and how can we act or react on this? How important the social aspect is in a town, and in this is also part or a reason why, for example, Cuba is so interesting for me.
Yeah.
Because in Havana, the inhabitants are asked for their needs. What do you need? What would you like to be developed? And what do you need to have a good way of living here?
Yeah.
And this is a process going on there in Havana, and the architects are aware of the importance of the needs of the inhabitants.
And so this is, the Cuba project here, is this, who is leading that process? Is it the architects? Is the government behind it? Is who's concerned most, I guess, with the users of space, the user of the people that live in these different buildings? Is it the architects themselves, or is the government sort of sponsoring this inquiry?
It is mainly guided by an institution, OHCH, which is like an institution for the history of the city.
Yeah.
And this institution is in charge of everything on the development of the old part of the town.
All right.
Which is in a for the tourists a very important part, and the tourists bring money into the country.
Uh-huh.
And Havana has a history of 500 years, so this is a huge museum for architects.
Right.
For architecture. And so the old part, especially the old part of Havana, is very important. And so this office or institution for the history is taking care of the development. So they ask, they really go outside and ask the inhabitants, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want? What do you expect? And then there are architecture studios who work on special objects.
Yeah.
That's houses and public spaces. And so the public spaces, for example, they have a very important role or more important position, because a big part of the life of in Cuba is taking place outside.
Right.
And so the places and parks have a very special meaning to the people, and they were renewed quite early. And now they have to they have become into a sort of network which is around the whole area of the old part of the town, and these places are important for the identification of the inhabitants with their city or with their town.
Yeah, it's part of the identity, I guess, of old Havana. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, is this part of? Is old Havana a UNESCO site?
Yes, since 1982, and since then there is a strong development in architecture and refurbishing, renewing, but also in finding maybe a sort of a new identity.
Yeah. So is it mainly preservation, or you know, where does the sort of the interviewing of the normal citizen and trying to incorporate other people's voices in this process? I mean, are they reshaping some spaces? I mean, are they trying to conserve or preserve the old, but actually add a new twist to it? Or how does that work? What's the balance there between the so-called old and the new?
There's, I think, many a big part of it is the to keep alive the old substance, to preserve it, and new buildings or new parts there's not so much, but the ideas are new. There are innovative strategies in finding out about the needs of the people.
Yeah.
And in, for example, every month there is a public speech held, and it's a public discussion on a certain subject which is relevant for the inhabitants. And they can ask questions and discuss about the speech. And this is something really, this is a good example. And I'd like to I wish that cities in other countries and also in Europe would do the same or something similar.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You're speaking to us from Switzerland, and Switzerland has a tradition of this direct democracy, and where people's voices are probably, or at least in terms of voting for referenda and such, that people's voices are a little bit heard. But at the same time, it's very interesting to kind of, you know, think of Cuba. I think of the dominant sort of way of thinking from Cuba, from the United States, that is, not from Europe, but from the United States, is this sort of dystopia, and the communism has sort of created, you know, there's this dictatorial sort of way of saying how things were going to happen for a number of decades. But yet, here's this great example of public participation design or public participatory sort of at least thinking and discussing, you know, these issues. I'd like to go back, though, too. I mean, in terms of the old and the new, I was really interested in bringing back the idea of the resonance, you know, in preservation, especially like a place of 500 years old, although you're speaking to me from a place that's much older than that. But the 500-year-old city, you know, does it, especially the old town and the old construction and the lines of the streets that they produce, and you know, this is a Spanish colonial, some of that leftover, the legacy of the colonists, the Spanish conquistadores, right, and establishing their urban plan with the plaza and with the grid lines of the roads, you know, all of that, does that have, you know, do you think that has a resonance? Is that something that we could extend that term that we, you know, you're talking about in your own work? Do we think of like these old spaces as producing a different feel or a different, you know, in everyday speak, we maybe say a vibe. What do you? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure it does. For example, when we see certain places, medieval places,
yeah,
or Renaissance places, they are they're different than places from later, from Classicism. And this is this completely different feeling. You feel more automatically, more comfortable,
yeah,
and more in a way of sheltered, geborgen, in a medieval place,
yeah,
which is not rectangular and not so strict.
Right.
For example, a fountain or a statue would not be in the middle of the place. When you have a medieval place, it would be somewhere aside where it doesn't disturb, and the midst would be free for whatever can,
yeah,
develop there for life. And this is something which has a certain harmony and a certain quality, which is very important. There is a difference,
yeah,
for sure.
And it orients ourselves. We orient ourselves differently, I think, with that urban design in some ways. What would you characterize as like the new part of this, the refurbishing or restoring, I guess, maybe the better word, the restoring of old Havana? Is there a resonance that the people that are organizing this process of getting feedback from the locals, mm-hmm, is there a resonance that they want to produce, and do they talk about it that way at all?
Yes, this is something I want to find out during my project.
Yeah.
And as far as I understand now, there is a quite huge resonance. When I see how many people visit these public speeches or discussions,
yeah,
that is really something. And I also have seen places with multi-use functions.
Uh-huh.
And so I see, okay, these places or urban public spaces are used, so there is a huge resonance between the city and the architecture and the inhabitants, the users, and the planners.
Yeah.
And the planning people really go outside and look for the contact to the inhabitants, and so I think it's an interwork or an exchange.
Yeah.
And this is something, to me, it seems to be really vivid.
So. And yeah, it almost, mm-hmm, it sounds like the architecture, the architects, and the people using the, you know, the spaces, need to be in harmony in a way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think That was my impression when I was now in Havana. This really works in both directions. I saw, for example, a place, Plaza del Cristo, which was not ready when I was in Havana 1 year ago. And now I saw the result. Mm-hmm. And this was really astonishing. There were different, there is different public furniture, like benches,
yeah,
or benches with tables, with a chess play,
right,
on top of it, and parts with only trees and a little green and shadow, and huger spaces for the people, the scholars from the school,
mm-hmm,
that they can make some sports there, which is really astonishing to us here in Europe. And so I see, and I saw there are many people, different generations, using this public space. So I think the system really works.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations. Geographical Imaginations is a growing multimedia public geography initiative designed to bring academic and everyday geographical thinking together. We believe everybody is a geographer and a co-maker of spaces. As an inquiry-based project, we ask questions and explore themes through dialogues with different texts and voices. Inevitably, our explorations return to simple yet complex questions, like how does blank inform the way I picture the world in my head? And how does that picture in turn limit or expand my place in the world? The main focus of the project is this hour-long radio essay program, or radio essay expedition, that's broadcast monthly from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. In each episode, we make brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. We reflect upon our relationships with the worlds we inhabit and co-create. While many of the episodes deal with local and regional topics, themes are somewhat universal, and our investigations could inform the geographical imaginations of those living anywhere in the world. Now let's get back to our episode. I'd like to, I guess, get and hear more in depth about the project, the project that you are have been working on, the project that I heard you present in Solothurn just a couple of weeks ago at the Culture Night. Can you just describe for us sort of the project in general, but also how you found it and what you're proposing to do? So walk us through kind of the description of the project and why it's important to you and to Cuba and to Havana itself. Just walk us through it.
Mm-hmm. So since a long time, many years, I have been interested in seeing Havana, this huge architecture museum. And then when I was there for the first time, I found out that women as architects and engineers are very engaged in many leading positions, and they have a huge influence. And I found out that there had been 2011 an exhibition only on architects and engineers in leading positions with a huge influence or impact in the renewal of old Havana. And I thought, oh, this is really interesting. I want to write something about it because it is worthwhile to be known in other countries as well.
Yeah.
And this gave me the idea of doing something bigger on it. And I do this project together with a photographer.
Yeah.
She is also architect. And so her name is Eva Wolanska, and we had then the idea we make an exhibition where we will show some of these strong and successful architects,
uh-huh.
female architects, and we want to characterize them, and we want to show some of their works, and we want to show how successful the refurbishment of or the renewal of old Havana is working, and the influence of these women.
Yeah, I mean, is it? Let's, I guess, compare it to Switzerland a little bit. Is it a more is the architect world more male dominated?
Yes, definitely.
Most of, even in Switzerland. So in Cuba,
even in Switzerland. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Cuba, we might make that sort of assumption that, well, it maybe even be more male dominated. But so here's these great examples of female architects and engineers who are instrumental in this sort of restoration or refurbishing of the old downtown. Now, will you take? Is it a question of continuing that 2011 exhibition and bringing it to Switzerland? Are you gonna? Are you too going to sort of refurbish that and add some of your own investigation, add some of your own photography to that exhibition? What might that look like?
Yeah, we decided that only showing the exhibition from 2011 here would be not enough.
Yeah.
Because we need an understanding of the history of architecture in Havana to understand what is going on now, and then we need to understand the history of the role of female architects in Cuba. Is this different than in Europe or not? And we also need to understand the context of the Socialist Republic and how this has influenced the possibility that so many women in also technical areas are so successful.
Yeah, really, I guess that sounds really interesting to me, like the tracing back the, okay, how are women in this position in Cuban society to be able to really sort of transform the landscape, even if it's in the sense of restoration, there's still their hand is on that transformation of the landscape and essentially affecting then the, not to to force the resonance here, but affecting, I think, how we experience the space to a big degree in the decisions that then they're making. Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see, is it a result of Cuban socialism that you know, women have that even opportunity to be in that position? You know, we hear a lot of things about the success of the Cuban education system and that success extending perhaps here cross gender, and it's not just a male dominated sort of education system where men or boys are pushed more than girls. This might be a great example of that challenges that kind of thinking, right? Or the old kind of thinking that boys would be pushed to do this, and especially especially a profession that, you know, historically has been, you know, male dominated.
Mm-hmm. I have found out so far that in Cuba, the amount of women is higher than men in general.
In general, yeah.
Huh. In general. Because there had been so many wars where Cuba had been involved, and I think the government found out, well, that women are necessary, really necessary workers, part of the society. So
yeah.
we need them
right.
as working people, and. Yeah, so there has been developed the thinking of the importance of both parts, male and female, and the education is very, very good, high education, also in architecture, and I think that is one of the main points.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking.
And the state is also helping families realizing to have a family and be successful in your work.
Uh-huh. Also, yeah, family planning in some ways, but also promoting career at the same time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I think, you know, the idea of space maybe for architects is, and I don't want to say it's limited to just the built environment. I think even from what we were talking about before with resonance, that's extending beyond just the built environment. But space, I guess, in human geography and cultural geography a lot of times, you know, we're talking about even a national space and it'd be interesting. I'd be curious to see, yeah, what is happening or what's happened in Cuba in the last few decades that essentially, and here what we would say is produced a space where that can happen, where women then are in the position to reshape then what is basically a World Heritage Site. And it's the so-called postcard of Havana. And it's so very, very, I think, like we said before, so very integral to the Cuban identity, at least the Havana identity. You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, where each month we venture into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check out the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode. With the Cuba project, you want to, so some of these ideas you want to bring back to Switzerland in terms of maybe creating an exhibition space back in Switzerland. What's the plan for that? Where are you at with that process?
Yes, I want to show what is possible, and I want to show that Havana is such a good example.
Yeah.
I would like to give ideas just to show the example as a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. So you want to bring the ideas of what's happening in Cuba. Bring it, make it more public, actually bring it to a European audience.
Yes.
Because it, you know, it was probably pretty limited, the exhibition that was put on in Cuba, in limited in the sense of how many people got to see it. So sort of continuing and helping get or publicize the project in general. Are you, just in terms of like planning, is this something that you might do in the next couple of years? Or
yes, I will work on this. We will come out with the exhibition 2019.
Uh-huh.
And this will be the year of the of 500 years Havana.
Oh wow.
Then let's see. I'm sure I will do maybe write a book on it or go on with my work, and I will follow this work definitely.
Yeah. So you're really invested in this in the next couple of years, looking at looking at all these different aspects that you're talking about in terms of research. I think that it gives it an extra, I think, I don't know, a different feeling in talking about the anniversary of the 500 years. I think that adds something special to it, doesn't it? And to think that 500 year history and the architecture of that 500 year history is now, probably initially wasn't in the hands of women architects, but it is today. And I think that's an interesting idea to kind of present.
Definitely. And also, it will help to strengthen the network of female architects and international co-working of architects.
Yeah.
I think this is important.
Yeah, helping build that network and sort of encouraging even more exchange perhaps between the different continents. You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, Radio Expeditions into the Geographies of Everything and Nothing. For more information about the show, check out the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Do you have an idea for an episode or want to give some feedback? Go to the comments section on the website or to the blog and enter into the conversation. Now let's get back to our expedition. The question about how you process space, and so how when you as architect, as person really, but who's also an architect, enters into a space. What do you look at? What do you try and sense out in terms of trying to feel, you know, we could use the term resonance like you use, or a sense of that place, or some people even say the spirit of the place, right? What are the things that you do? What's your checklist? What are the things that you're looking for?
Yeah, first is to feel the, what you say, the genius loci.
Yeah.
Then I look, for sure, I look at the facades of the buildings.
Uh-huh.
Then I look at the proportions,
yeah.
The height of the buildings compared to the size of the street or of the place
yeah.
or of the space. is this in harmony or not? And then I, for sure, I look at the colors, and then I look at the people. How do they act? Are they all in a hurry or not? And then I look if there are there different areas, different qualities, areas of different qualities, for example, in a place. And other components, like is there nice public furniture, which I would like to use or not? And are there trees or is there some vegetation? And in general, is this an interesting, differentiated room or space or architecture, or is it rather boring? This is something I look at.
Yeah. And if it's boring, does it, you're disinterested?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, if that feeling of boredom comes first, do you then try and figure out why? I mean, is this something that you, just as a practice, do you try and like look around and determine, okay, well, why? Why do I feel bored here?
Yes, actually, yes, I do so.
Yeah.
And then I find, I think immediately, I think what would I change? And or maybe this has an aesthetics I don't see at the first sight, and maybe it's more hidden, and you have to look more carefully. And then I also recheck how do other people act, and do they like it or not, and or is it only me who feels uncomfortable? And this is a process. This is this resonating process, this going back and forth. What is going on in me, and what's the effect of the architecture in me and on others?
Yeah. So from what vantage point do you prefer to do this? Sitting down at a table with drinking a coffee? Are you sitting down on one of those comfortable pieces of public furniture? Are you walking through it?
Walking.
Yeah.
Walking is the best way to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually,
because you move, you can change the perspective, and by moving your body, you are more able to understand a space.
Yeah, because right, because you're in movement. I mean, is the space in? Do you think the space is in movement?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, even though the buildings themselves are pretty stable and in their place,
they seem so.
But I guess maybe for the listener a little bit, like the built architecture, the built environment, we assume it's just not moving, but that's only part of the space. Is that how we should kind of think about this? Because the space, as we're talking about it, is much more immaterial. It's not necessarily something that you can touch, or not always. I mean, yes, you can touch the building, you can touch the public square, but this feel is something that, well, it's beneath the surface. We don't necessarily touch it with our finger.
Yeah, and this is the aspect of atmosphere.
Yeah,
rather atmosphere than space, I think. Because atmosphere is something that changes throughout the day with a different light, and other people may be using, let's say, a public space, different activities, different sounds also.
Right.
And this gives a different feeling of public spaces. Throughout the day,
yeah.
Throughout the year.
What's your favorite city to walk through?
Good question. At the moment, it's I think it's Havana.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So Havana. Yeah. How about Berlin? Do you like to walk through Berlin?
Berlin has changed a lot. It was very, very interesting in the beginning of the 90s or throughout the 90s to me. Now it has changed a lot. It's a very crowded city now and very rapid. It's not so not so good to just walk slowly because the pulse of the city is quite rapid.
So it's sped up since the fall of the wall.
Yes.
Do you think Havana? You know, this is the thing on everyone's mind is okay. Cuba's opening up to. Well, it's been open to most of the world, but I'm, you know, from the American perspective, there's a lot of Americans that are waiting in line to go to Cuba, basically, because it's, you know, it's exotic and it's been untouchable for so long, right? And so there's this concern that Havana will, its pace, its rhythm will speed up because of the influx then of the tourists, essentially, more tourists. I mean, because you, as European, I mean, you can go essentially when you want, but because it's so close to the U.S., right? The assumption is that a lot of American tourists eventually will start to find their way there, and how will that change the feel of the city?
Yeah, maybe this will change the feel of the city. What I have found out yet is that throughout the past years, maybe 10 years, for example, there has been a change in the in music that people, Cubans who love to listen to music and to dance, the music is louder, so that there have been already some inhabitants in the old Havana saying, well, there are so many people here living in a small space, and when there are more and more people having parties and festivities with very loud music, we cannot sleep.
Right.
And so this is something the Cubans have become in concerning listening music louder. That's what the people tell me.
And it'll change the schedule of the day if it becomes more, if there's more visitors there than the locals, so to speak.
I don't know the reason yet.
Yeah.
But what I want to say is there have been some changes so far.
Yeah.
And so I think also the pulse of the city or the rhythm might be faster and getting faster the more Cuba opens up.
Yeah. I mean, does it get faster because people who are already living that faster rhythm come and visit. And so they're shaping the space too in some ways.
And I think the more possibilities to make own business, private business, which seems to be interesting for a lot of people in Havana, the faster the life will be. At the moment, there are many people just walking around slowly. It is also very hot many parts of the year, so you cannot walk around really in a hurry.
So the natural environment is gonna keep that under tabs a little bit.
But my feeling is that the people in Havana still enjoy life a lot.
Yeah,
is my impression.
I mean, you're saying businesses. Do we take it a further step and say that the opening to, or the further opening to capitalism is going to speed people up?
Yes, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, another episode has come to an end. A big thanks to Chris Heidrich, who joined us from Switzerland to discuss her work and her main project these days. Please check the show's website later for further updates on the exhibition. If we are in Europe, I think the show will have to make a visit and interact with the photos, texts, and viewers. I'd be very curious about how this reshapes some of our thinking about Havana, about Cuba, and about the role of women in Cuban and or Latin American society. This marks the end of three seasons, a show that started out because a relatively free space with little or no barriers to access presented itself in Salzburg, Austria. I had been in Salzburg only 2 months when the first episode aired. Thanks again to Radio Fabrique, and I must name her on air, Eva Schmidhuber, for taking a chance on a non-German-speaking foreigner who showed up at the door with just an idea. To all those at Radio Fabrique, your hard work helps us make our ideas and projects more public. That is quite radical. Dankeschön. Ich bin ein Salzburger. Look for us next month when we kick off season 4 officially from here in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.